From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, as the salmon season wraps up, humpy catches break records in the Central Gulf. The coho run on the Yukon was gangbusters too. And tracking king salmon in the murky Kenai River, part one. All on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
King salmon catches in Prince William Sound have exceeded preseason expectations, and the total pink harvest is now over 97.5 million fish. KCHU's Marsha Lynn reports on this year's record-breaking season.
All summer, I kept trying to report on the amazing pink salmon catches in Prince William Sound, but my source was just not available. That is, until the last purse seine delivery was made on Saturday, August 29th.
That's all she wrote for what was a very long and very productive season.
Tommy Sheridan from the Cordova Fish and Game Office manages the Prince William Sound purse seine fisheries, where pinks are the main target. He says, what a season it was.
When it's all tallied up, it'll be a record harvest, but for those who participated in the fishery, I think they will attest to the fact that there was a lot more opportunity this year than we've ever seen. All in all, just a phenomenal year.
So that's why I haven't been able to get hold of you.
Yeah, it just slowed down quite recently.
It was a winner from the get-go.
We early on saw good signs for a wild stock return in and around the streams and through harvest contributions, and that continued for the entirety of the season. We're still flying the streams and will for the next several weeks, so we don't have a final tally on what the wild stock return is, but contributions to harvest are at a record level. We're looking at somewhere around 25 million plus.
That compares to the 2013 record wild stock pink harvest of just over 17 million.
We've also seen very strong escapements in the streams. I think we're looking at the possibility of a total wild stock return of 40 million, which is really amazing. The previous record was 30 million in 2013, and so to go that much higher is something that we wouldn't have expected and certainly is newsworthy.
And Prince William Sound was in the news a lot when day after day, daily harvest records were broken as pinks flooded into hatcheries around the area. Sheridan says processors kept up.
They were able to stay on top of it, so capacity was stretched to its limits, but all accounts are that it worked out well. We do have significant processing capacity in the Sound these days relative to, say, even 10 years ago. And with Southeast Alaska's pink salmon fishery coming in under forecast, there was the opportunity for folks to ship pink salmon to Southeast Alaska for processing.
Although number crunching from fish tickets is still going on, Sheridan says the size of pinks this season looks to be about average.
Probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 3.5 pounds per fish.
But he says prices to fishermen are down.
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 cents a pound, and that's down from a little bit over 30 cents a pound in 2014. Where it settles out postseason, I'm not sure, but it's going to be down this year.
Yet, Sheridan says it's been a phenomenal season.
Record number of fish harvested, and with those fish being average or maybe even slightly greater than average in size, it is really, truly, by far the record pounds harvested for the Sound, in excess of 300 million pounds of pink salmon.
Sheridan says most years, Solomon Gulch Hatchery in Valdez has a large silver salmon run, and he's expecting surplus fish this year. He says it's likely there will be a commercial fishery for silvers in Port Valdez lasting several days. In Valdez, I'm Marsha Lynn.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. amsea@amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
This year's harvest of coho salmon on the Yukon River is the largest on record, with over 117,000 fish caught. That's almost twice as much as Fish and Game's preseason projection. The record-breaking harvest comes out of a run that managers do not know much about, including how many fish are returning to their spawning grounds. From KIYU in Galena, Tim Bodoni reports.
The coho run is something of a mystery on the Yukon. It happens at the same time as the much larger fall chum run, and it's the least measured of the four major salmon runs on the Yukon. Managers only have one coho escapement goal for one tributary in the entire Yukon River drainage, the Delta Clearwater River. Fish and Game also conducts aerial surveys for coho in the Nenana River drainage and Upper Tanana River area, but relatively few coho are seen, and the numbers vary widely from year to year. Coho can also run quite late in the fall. Fish and Game estimates that about 20% of the run on average comes in after assessment tools like the pilot station sonar and the lower river test fisheries have stopped for the year. So the big question is, how big actually is the Yukon coho run, out of which commercial fishermen took a big bite this year? Jack Schulteis is the general manager of the major fish buyer on the lower Yukon, Quipuc Fisheries, based in Amonok. He faults Fish and Game for underestimating the true size of the coho run this year and says that a big commercial harvest is a reflection of a strong run.
It's really simple to me. It was just a good coho run. Norton Sound had a good coho run, a really good coho run. Both north and south of us had a lot of cohos. Why wouldn't the Yukon have a good coho run? I mean, they're all out in the same ocean. They all came from the same parent year.
Schulteis is also critical of Fish and Game for reducing commercial fishing near the mouth of the river in mid-August, when he says fish passage was strong. The pilot station sonar, the main tool used by managers to calculate upriver escapement, was regularly showing that lower river fishermen were catching more fish than were allowed to pass upriver. Jeff Estenson, Yukon River in-season manager for the Department of Fish and Game, confirms that he canceled one commercial opener in mid-August out of concern that lower river commercial fishermen were catching too many coho. Upon further review, he concedes that the pilot station sonar has probably been undercounting coho.
After talking with the sonar staff, we kind of came to the determination that the number that we were reporting at pilot, the actual number was a little bit higher than that. So, you know, what we've been telling people is that, you know, for example, the 97,500 coho that we counted past pilot station sonar through the end of the operation, we believe that that's kind of a minimum count. And actually what we have going by was closer to probably the 122,000, which is about median or about average for coho past the sonar.
Estenson says that Fish and Game wants more information about where coho salmon go in the Yukon River drainage, with an eye towards setting more detailed escapement targets for the run.
And the department is pursuing funding right now to try to do a radial telemetry project on the Yukon where the coho salmon would be tagged in the lower river, and then we would use a series of towers and aerial flights to try to track where they're going, and then also try to get a handle on the timing of when they're coming in the river and as they're moving into different areas.
The escapement project at the Delta Clearwater doesn't happen until October. Even then, Estenson says, the data it produces does not show a strong correlation with the pilot station sonar, leaving managers to guess on what the true coho escapement and run size might be. The Yukon Coho Management Plan allows Estenson to schedule directed commercial openings for coho in September, but he does not intend to do so, which would make Friday's openings in Yukon Districts 1 and 2 the last ones for the season. In Galena, this is Tim Bodoni.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
One fish, two fish, maybe a red fish, but probably not a blue fish. There's new technology to count fish, and it's making a big difference in the Kenai River King Salmon Sonar Program. KDLL's Jenny Nyman has this report.
The black computer screen lit up with bluish flashes moving across the window. It looked like a maternity ultrasound,
But the images weren't depicting the developing limbs of a baby. Clear as day, or clear as night with a high-powered flashlight, the display showed fish swimming by.
When we went from split beam to Didson, it was like turning a flashlight on, you know, underwater, because you could see so much more, you could make out what was going on. So it's more than just these little funny squiggly lines.
That's Jim Miller, Kenai King Salmon Sonar Project biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The difference in the King Salmon Sonar program in the Kenai River 10 years ago to today isn't quite biblically dramatic, but the advancement is revelatory. When Miller started in Alaska's salmon counting sonar program in 1992 on the Nooshigak River, Bendix sonar was the technology of the day. The interface spat out data on a paper tape and displayed the echoes bounced off the fish on a tiny oscilloscope screen.
You could see the blips on an oscilloscope as a fish went by, and that's all you had. You had a blip on an oscilloscope and a ticker tape.
On the Kenai, king counting used to be done with split-beam sonar. The echoes from the low-frequency sonar waves appeared on a computer screen as a series of dots in patterns called fish traces. Technicians would count the fish traces to determine the number of fish passing by and use the pattern of echoes to determine whether it was a large fish, a king salmon, or something smaller, such as a sockeye.
And then split-beam, of course, you had an echogram where you could actually see squiggles of fish going through. They're just squiggles, but you get the S shape to them, so it looks like a fish swimming through.
A new era dawned in 2002 with Didson technology. The dual-frequency identification sonar emits high-frequency sound waves and displays the bounce-back data as video-like images. The imagery is so clear you can see fish swimming by and measure their length on screen. Didson was tested from 2002 to 2009 and replaced split beam in the Kenai in 2010. The King Sonar program improved yet another notch when it moved upriver in 2013 to a new site at River Mile 14. The channel is narrower there, and there's less debris to damage the equipment. Water levels are more consistent without tidal influence, and the current is more steady, so kings do tend to stay in the middle of the channel with sockeye closer to shore. But if kings occasionally do stray from mid-river, the sonar is more likely to see them at the new site.
We have the four sonars on the main channel. In the offshore, we've got three different stratum. And then on the opposite bank, we have two stratum on the near shore and two on the offshore. And we sample each stratum 10 minutes out of the hour. So we have the four sonars that cover, you know, each stratum. You add them all together, it covers clear across the river.
An upgraded version of the technology, called ARIES, came out in 2012 and has added even more functionality to the post-processing software. All in all, Miller said that this summer has been the best in the Kenai King Sonar program's history.
We're very happy with the way things have gone this summer and with the equipment, and definitely leaps and bounds from where it was when I first started out in 92, and even here on the Kenai from 2000 to now, both in our ability to more accurately estimate the passage, as well as, you know, be able to see what's going on in the river with the video quality images. It's awesome.
In Kenai, I'm Jenny Nyman.
But how exactly does the technology work? Tune in next week as Jenny takes a test drive as a sonar technician.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported, in part, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by the Kodiak Area Native Association's Tobacco Prevention and Education Program. Cano believes everyone has the right to breathe smoke-free air. More information is available at 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KCHU's Marsha Lynn in Valdez, KDLL's Jenny Nyman in Kenai, and KIYU's Tim Bodoni in Galena. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.